Hey, welcome back, everybody, to my podcast. And today's guest is Sophia Young Malcolm. She's an old friend of mine from high school. We were both exchange students at Evangel Christian Academy in Louisiana. We talked about that. We talked about her struggles as an exchange student. We talked about the date that we had 24 years ago that I was able to talk about finally. It was a very lighthearted conversation, but she was also a superstar, going from being a star in high school to going to Baylor, winning the national championship there, being the MVP, which I was imminent about it. It was called MIP back in the day in college, as well as playing from WNBA, transferring and playing in Europe, playing in Italy and Turkey, as well as China. So the struggles of playing all year round. We talked about the challenges there, the physical and mental challenges. We talked about retirement, of how she prepared herself and how she's becoming somebody new right now, to putting that old side behind her and embracing the new challenges that come along of being a coach, finding a new identity. And we talked about relationships. She has a podcast with her husband about relationships that you should also check out. We talked a whole bunch of other things that are just kind of bits and pieces there for the journey. A lot of very philosophical conversation, as well as Christian. She's very Christian, and you could sense that in this conversation as well. And I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you did, please share with friends, with family, with professionals, coaches, players, former players. There's a lot of things to learn, especially for players and players going into retirement, because we talked a lot actually about the mind shifting and the ego death, basically, of being an ex-player, ex-superstar. So if you did, please subscribe also and share with everybody else, and hopefully see you soon. Bye. Sophia, welcome to my podcast world.
Yay, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, fellow Evangel Christian Eagle, fellow podcaster.
Wow.
Yeah. We're gonna talk about your podcast right away.
Okay.
Right. I've got a story for you, and before you talk about the podcast, and you're gonna tell me what advice you would give me after I tell you the story.
Okay.
You got a relationship podcast, right?
I do have a relationship podcast.
Relationship and Reason. So that's what it's called for everybody.
Yes.
So before you tell me about the podcast, I'll tell you a story. After 24 years, I think it's a safe zone to talk about it now.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. So for everybody who doesn't know, Sophia and me went to the same high school, and we were both exchange students. She was there before me.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2 years before me, you came there, maybe.
Yes. Yeah.
So I was living with a family. She was living with a family, We went on a date, and the date was, because I didn't have a driver's license, so my host mother picked you up. We were both there together in the big van. Drove us to the house that my host parents were at, and we were supposed to watch a movie, and we were just sitting there in the living room. You, me, and the whole family basically was sitting there.
Uh-huh.
Miss Diane didn't want to leave. She was so curious. She was just always there, and Ariel was there. And and then at some point, I just decided to go to my room, and I just didn't want to have any part of that. And I left you alone with my host family basically in the room. And then at some point, 30 minutes into the so-called date, they came. It's like Ms. Diane said, "Ben, so you want to hang out with Sophia or what's up? Why are you?" I was like, "No, you guys have fun. You just enjoy having a company." At some point, she drove you back home, and I was just like, "Yeah, all right, that was the date." I don't think I ever told anybody this story. That was like the most insecure date I think I've ever had. I'm usually an easygoing person, but that was something.
Yeah.
I was intimidated by the whole family being around and watching like what I'm gonna say. I felt so judged.
That's all right. We blame it on our youth, you know, the things we do, you know, that's back in the day. And because we were with a family that weren't necessarily like our biological family, you kind of didn't, you know, you didn't want to like be rude to them to say, hey, can you please leave? You know, but so I'm sure because you're easy going, you didn't want it, you know, didn't want to offend them, I'm sure.
Yeah, so. I was 17. I didn't want to get kicked out of the house too. I mean, it was like, correct. It was actually correct. Like,
we were at their mercy. We were at their mercy.
Exactly. we're going to talk about the exchange too, because I'm sure a lot of exchange students live through the same pains the pains basically that we lived through. But tell me a little bit about your podcast, because Relationship and Reason, you run it with your husband how do you guys go about, you guys just talk about certain topics or you have guests on, and what's it like?
Well, let me tell you how we first got started. A radio personality here in Waco. We're currently working at Baylor. And so he came to me and he wanted to me to do a podcast. And so I was like, okay, this is something that I've always wanted to do. And so I was like, what is something that would be interesting for people to hear about? And so I talked to my husband about it. And I was like, we should talk about our relationships, just because there is, we wanted to come with a different perspective, obviously, like with being a Christian and marriage and the things that we actually went through and how we had to grow in Christ as individuals, but to also together as a couple. And so we kind of wanted to share things that we have gone through. We've been married for 10 years now. So we've gone through that has been successful and things that has not been successful and things that we are continuing to work at. We don't have a perfect marriage, but just areas where we're like, you know what, people need to hear this. And so a part of our family vision, mission statement is to be good stewards of our relationships, our resources, and our reasons, relationships and people, our relationship with God, resources and finances, time, and reason. Why did God put us here on this earth? So the podcast stemmed from that. Like, what is the two main things is relationships and with people, with our spouses, with people that we come in contact with. And our reason, why is it that we're here on earth? Why do we go through the things that we go through? Is it just for us in our time? Is it just is for other people? Is it for a future generation? Why is it that we are going through, you know, what we're going through, and what was our purpose here? So that's the premise behind the podcast. So we got started back, I think. We started in November. We recorded a few episodes and then we launched it, I think, at the beginning of the year. And so we have about like 8 episodes out, but we took a pause because basketball season got really, really busy. I just didn't have enough time to like record as much. And so we're going to try to pick back up with it as the summertime comes around when we'll have a lot more time. But it's just basically talking about like the relationship that Jermaine and I have together, and again, how we met, what we have gone through.
It's just you two, talking.
It's just the two of us, but we are wanting to pick. We are wanting to get guests on there as well.
Okay, yeah.
Part of that is like, hey, what are some things that was so challenging for you that kind of where you thought like you weren't going to make it in this relationship, right? And how did it work out? And what do you feel like God's calling you to do? That type of stuff.
So. It's man, relationships are they're mesmerizing. I mean, it's the topic of the relationship, but just in general between a female and a male, the dynamics that come into play. It's mind blowing and it's so complicated. And I think like there is no perfect marriage. I mean, I've never been married, but I've never been in a perfect relationship. I don't think a perfect marriage exists. It's just some sort of balancing the good with the bad, and then maybe taking the 80-20 rule into account and just being kind of taking the 80 with the 20 that comes, and you just take it, you know, roll with the punches when it comes along. But then when kids come into play, there's a whole different world coming at you. So I'm sure there's so many things to unravel there that the podcast will go on forever. You know,
that is the hope, because you're right. Like what exactly is perfect? You know, like when you come think about a marriage, like what is perfect? Perfect is not
perfect.
Arguable.
Do you want perfect?
Yeah, no, right? Like, I don't know what perfect is, because is people, when people categorize perfect as like, oh, we never argue. And well, that's kind of boring, right? Like, why would you want a relationship where there's no like, you know, give and take and So perfect is like where there's no trials, but then why would you want that? Because then you don't grow, you know? So
yeah,
it's all different things. So, but yeah.
Yeah, it's something that I'm contemplating a lot about, just because, you know, my life in terms of where I'm at, and, you know, I think is everybody's in a different part of their lives, different stages of their lives, and have to deal with different things, you know. And then depending on what your partner is, what age they're at, and how their career is going, you know, there's little things come up here and there, and that can throw you off if you're not ready, you're not anticipating. The one thing that I heard on one of the podcasts that I listen to a lot, was that there was an entrepreneur, I forgot who they interviewed, but he said that the biggest thing that he did for his current relationship or marriage at that time already, that was that they got a couples therapist right away, just right as they got into a relationship, to anticipate the problems that are going to hit them. They just kind of went straight into a therapy and then just worked it out of what could trigger her, him, and just kind of worked through things that their past and anticipated everything.
Yeah, that's so good. That's part of like whenever we were going through, we got engaged, and one of our biggest things is like we have to go through premarital counseling, you know, because I think those, sometimes you're like, oh, I'm so in love, nothing's ever going to go wrong. So you kind of have to like look past that phase and to see like, okay, what can I prepare myself for, in those times? And I think that counseling is one of those things where people can find it to be like, oh my gosh, if I get a counselor, that means I'm weak. But it's like, no, it means that you're strong. You get a counselor so you can remain strong, right? It's kind of like a coach, right? You get a coach so you can get better at a certain situation. So I think that's phenomenal. What a great plan that was.
Yeah, he said that was his best investment. He said for right away, a personal investment. But let's dive a little bit into your career. And you know, if we want to talk about everything, we might as well write a book. But so I'm gonna try to hit the highlights and the points that I wanted to hit. But let's start with the common denominator, the exchange student part, where I remember the toughest part for me was my first year with the family was Christmas. But what did you lean on when you had some struggles that you felt like you were, you know, so far away, removed from family, from friends, and anything back home that you felt like came up in the tough moments? What did you lean on? Who did you lean on the most, and what helped you through it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that when the opportunity first came for me to come to the US, I was like, oh my gosh, the United States, this is gonna be awesome. I'm never gonna have any problems. It's gonna be perfect, you know. American, land of the free, you're gonna get everything that you ever desire. And that was not the case the first year when I came to the US. Oh my gosh. I did not like it at all. I did not like being away from my family, from my culture, from people that I knew, that I love, from the food, just everything about it. So for me, I got baptized right before I came to the US. And so for me, like my church was huge. My youth pastor was huge for me. That community was a big deal for me. And you're also
just to say, you're from St. Vincent, just to let everybody know.
Yes, St. Vincent. The Grenadines, which is in the Caribbean. So even though we spoke English, but my dialect was different, my accent was a little bit, you know, hard for me to understand, and I had to keep repeating myself all the time, and that was annoying, you know. Coming to Shreveport, Louisiana, where it's kind of like a, you know, it's not a New York or Miami of the US,
and so not that was close. that's there's a couple levels in between there too.
So yeah, so my church community was a huge deal, and also the basketball court. Basketball court was where I find like I used to get away and clear my head, you know. And it was just that place where you just didn't think anymore, you know. Like whatever was going on, the sadness, you just didn't think about that there. So I used that as my escape place.
Yeah, that was church for me also. I mean, it's church. It was when I went to. The family actually, I mean, in the beginning, they dragged me into because I was not used to going to church, you know. And then when I went to college, I went by myself because it was just a community. It was something to give you a little bit of peace, and it was something to give you something to think about. But basketball court by far was something where you just, it's a meditation. It was meditation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. escape. It's like that perfect escape place, because basketball, you're running so much and you definitely don't have time to be sad, right? Like, you'd be sad because you missed a shot, but not like, oh my gosh, what's my family doing? You know?
No, but even going 1-on-0, you know, just going 1-on-0, just going there by yourself, the empty gym, and you just go into your own zone and just... You'll focus on the shot. You focus on your moves. You just, it's a complete different, it's an escape. It's a complete escape. And only basketball players will understand that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You definitely got to play ball to understand those moments. And especially when you want to get better at something, you start thinking about, okay, what move do I want to work on now? You know, so it kind of gives you that room to just be free.
So you became a star at high school. You went to Baylor. You guys won a national championship. You got the most, is it called MIP? Most important player was it at that time?
MVP, most valuable player.
Because I remember when they were calling it MIP. I think it doesn't matter, but you got that, whatever it's called.
Whatever it is, the most whatever.
The most whatever. Yeah, that was you. That was you. But at any point during that journey, you know, there was expectations attached to it anytime, everywhere you went to, and you always go to the next level, you go to the WNBA, there's always expectations attached to the achievements that you had prior, you know, going up, and you achieve those achievements, you get there, you go to the next level. At any point, did you have any struggles with a healthy balance between reality and stardom? Because you were a star at every level. And then, you know, was there any time there was a challenge where you kind of felt like, oh man, I'm not being myself here, because it was just attention. You maybe getting ahead of yourself a little bit. Was there any time that you struggled with that?
I think I struggled with that most in the pros than I did in college or in high school. In high school, I was just kind of learning the game, so there wasn't anything to like literally back myself on. Like I didn't play growing up all my life to where I'm like, okay, now I'm really good, right? In college, I had a few moves, and I didn't know I was going to play in the league. I didn't go into college saying like, oh yes, I definitely want to play in the WNBA. So that stardom idea was not even close to being a thought. Not until we won a national championship when people were like, hey, you can probably play in the league. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. You know? so it didn't affect me there. I think in the pros, when success started happening, maybe the fourth or fifth year when I was kind of like on an upward rise, and I felt like, okay, you know what? I'm actually pretty good. But, you know, obviously there's a point, there's a thin line in that area, because in a pro, you have to be confident in yourself, right?
Right.
You have to have this confidence to where you know that, okay, I'm really good at this and I can do it. But there's also a line where it becomes like a little bit cocky, you know, and where you become a little bit too proud, to where you're like, okay, no, I am really good. And I think for me, it's always been the case, if ever I get to a point where I am, where my thought process about what I am capable of doing does not fall in line with God. You know, I am, like I said, Christian since I was 15 years old, and my relationship with God has always been to where whenever I put anything, especially basketball, as my idol, and it becomes my top priority. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Holy Spirit has a way of just humbling me. I remember specifically, I was playing in Italy. I had had a great WNBA season, and I'm going to Italy to play, and I felt like I was on top of the world. And I remember going to the arena, and you know, having some great practices, getting ready to start the season, and for some reason, like I'm supposed to score like, you know, 25, 30 points a game, and I'm only scoring like 2, maybe 6 points a game, you know. And that happened for a good 2 months. So much so that the coach was wanting to fire me. He called my agent and he's like, hey, you know, I don't think this was working out. And I could not understand why my practices wasn't translating over into my games. Like, I literally just couldn't do what I knew I could. And I remember one night, it was just me and God, and I'm praying. And I'm like, God, what's going on? You know, this guy is trying, these people are trying to fire me. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening. And I felt like the Holy Spirit gave me this vision of almost like a sheep and being like, you know, in the shepherd's hand. Like I was being molded and broken and put back, like I was broken. Mm-hmm. And I had to be put back into pieces. And so to me, that vision was you think that you are doing this. You know, what basketball has become such an idol for you that I needed to humble you. Right. Because I was literally a sheep. Right. And I needed my shepherd, who is to me, you know, for me is God. It was so crazy. I had to get to the point where I'm like, oh my God, I repent. You know, you're right. I have been putting basketball as this idol. And it wasn't until I got to the point of like complete surrender, mm-hmm. to where basketball became, where it was back into the place where it's supposed to be, that it was like a shift. When I say a shift, a complete shift to where everything just started going right, to where the coach was like, can I sign her back for another 3 years? You know, went from going like almost fired to that. But to me, so whenever basketball became that top priority for me, the Holy Spirit always brought something in my world to humble me, to make me realize like I can take this away from you as quickly as you got it. You know, yeah, and as surprising as you got it, it can go away that quick. So from that moment, that has always been a revelationary experience for me to know that, hey, if it wasn't for the grace of God, you wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. So don't ever put basketball into this space where it's not supposed to be. Because that was so eye opening for me, it did a number on my mental, perception of God and where I place God compared to where I place the sport. So. So much so that, you know, I faced a lot of trials coming towards the end of my season. I'm having to experience God again in another experience, in another way, where he's like, hey, I got you no matter what you go through. I got you. Yeah.
Put things into perspective. I mean, I'm sure it's very revelation, you know, just kind of a reality check, and for you to get humbled down and understanding that there's probably made life easier also on the court, not to think about it too much, because you were continuing to put pressure on it, compiling it, and then just kind of took that off, probably like just a little bit of a relief, you know, maybe a little bit, and just kind of having faith and letting go. And then things just become easier as you go through. But it's a good, absolutely. It's a good transition point, because you were, as a WNBA player, a lot of players go back and forth between Europe and the NBA, WNBA. And then also China, and you play Galatasaray in Istanbul, right? And then also in China. And how did you manage the workload? How do the WNBA players usually manage the workload of going back and forth continuously? And it's basically a 12-month job. You know, it was just at some point, it's got to be ridiculous.
It was brutal. It was brutal. I did it for about 4 years in a row, and I got to a point where I was like, oh my gosh, I need a break. you know, I literally had to tell my agent, like, do not sign me for the first half of the season.
But mentally or physically more?
Both. It was just so draining, because it was literally playing in a EuroLeague, EuroCup over in Europe, and traveling all the way, you know, all around Europe. And then coming back to the WNBA and going literally right into training camp. Mm-hmm. So there were years when I did not have a break at all. And obviously practices were not as challenging over there as it is here, but it's every day, right? And it's constant, and it's and when you travel, it's a long travel. So that it was brutal the first when I did not take that break within the first 4 years or so. And I was just like, I had to tell myself, like, I can't do this in order for me to sustain a long career. But I also had like great vets who told me this. And they told me, like, hey, even if you go overseas and you sign with a big, a good team, you have to be able to let your agent know that, to tell them there's certain times that you're not going to be able to practice. You're going to need a lot more time off, right? Just for your mental health.
Yeah.
And then obviously back then, it wasn't like a mental health kick as it is now. Yeah. You know, you didn't really call it that. You just know that you just needed a break. You just needed a break from anything.
It's got to be an information overload. It just got to be emotionally draining and physically anyways, but emotionally, you just, even, you know, it's like a burnout. You know, you're on a burnout syndrome, just doing physical and mental workload the whole time. And then you got to get this mental abuse by the coach all the time. You know, you get the mental abuse by the fans. Then you, I mean, it's just a never ending story. And you go from one continent to another. It's got to, I was trying to put myself in your shoes and then just kind of understand of how I would deal with it at some point. You just kind of, I would just get away from basketball just because of that, just the constant, you know, putting the load on you, because everybody needs to break at some point. It's not normal.
Absolutely. And then, you know, the thing about it, doing that lifestyle is that it takes away from relationships.
Yeah.
You know, that was hard. That was really, really hard, because you have your friends that, you know, like you were in college with them for like 4 years straight. And then all of a sudden you don't see them, but like, you know, two times a year. And you just like, oh my gosh, I don't even know if we're friends anymore, right? Yeah. Just because like you literally do not see them. So like that for me, I'm a friendship, you know, person. I love people and I love to be around people. And so I was like, I need to take a break so I can see my friends, you know, like you just mentioned, like I needed to get energized, and I needed to get energized by people, you know, without basketball whatsoever. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the point I'm at right now, quite frankly. I'm at the point, like I realized that the sacrifice that I did the last 13 years since my career took a turn, and you just kind of absorb yourself with the career and everything is great. Everything, I just got nothing to complain about career wise. But then now you kind of realize there is a lot of things, a lot of social life missing, a lot of people missing around you that you usually see. Absolutely. Like you said, I'm a people's person too. I like to hang out, talk, and talk smack, have fun, just kind of just as we did back in the days. But it's also, it's something that we are all social animals. We all need that tribe. We all need the people around you to see you on a, not necessarily maybe on a daily basis, but we do have to have that connection to that sanity, you know, just to have people around to see you day to day.
Yeah. It's just crazy that, well, it's not crazy. It's so amazing that whenever you do get with people and you're like just laughing and, you know, there's like four or five of you connect and you're just like, oh my gosh, I feel so alive.
Rejuvenated. Right?
Rejuvenated. And you just, there's just this energy that you get back into your spirit to where you're like, you know what? I can do this. Whatever it is I'm going through, I can do it, because I have people that just kind of gives me energy. So
yeah, absolutely. It's the same with the weight room also, or athletics, whatever you do, you put energy out, but you get good energy back. You know, your body feels better and you do feel rejuvenated, as counterintuitive as it sounds. But that load that you had also physically, it tore your knee up, right? I mean, you went to China. And
I tore my knee up in China. Oh my gosh. And China was one of the hardest countries that I played in. Europe
culturally,
Europe
culturally or in terms of in what aspect, mostly
both culturally and physically. I would say that's the place where I lost the most weight. I know one of my friends came to visit me one time. She's like, so why do you look like you're so skinny? And I didn't realize that, you know, I had lost so much weight. But the reason being is that the practice was just so much. And I wanted to go to China because they had a short season. And in my head, I'm like, you know what? Again, with the idea of taking a break before the WNBA season started. And I was like, I can go in November. We'll be done in February. I'll have March, April, and get ready for May, you know, training camp. So I'll have a couple months off. That was my thinking process, why I wanted to go to China. And so I went, and obviously the language is different. Yeah. In Europe, you can obviously read letters and figure out words, but obviously in Chinese it's not the same. So you had to, that was the only place where I had a translator, to where I didn't understand anything at all, and I never understood anything. you know, again, in Europe, you can figure things out.
Yep.
Right. You can understand what the language is that people are saying.
Totally.
But in Chinese, that was very hard. So I had to have a translator with me the whole time throughout practice, you know, and everywhere that I went. So that was a bit of a challenge. And I had came from Italy to where it is like lovey-dovey, you know, like mwah, mwah. Everybody's like hugging and, you know, and to China was a little bit, you know, not very touchy. So that was hard.
Yeah,
that was hard. And yeah, obviously if your teammates didn't speak English, there was literally no way to connect.
Yeah.
Again, because of language barrier, which was not the same in Europe. You can still connect with people even if you didn't speak the same language. So physically and mentally, it took me a while to get used to actually being there.
Yeah.
And we practiced so much. It was just a hard thing on my body. So towards the end of the time there in February, going up for a layup and did it all. And I think I was just, I wasn't lifting enough. Like my body wasn't strong enough. I think I had just lost so much weight and whatever.
Muscle mass. Yep.
Muscle mass was diminished completely. So toward that, but you know, God is so unique in his ways. You know, I'm sitting there like, oh, you know, I'm going to go to China, play, come back, travel, hang out with my friends, go home, back to the Caribbean, meet my family and all this stuff. And then I told my ACL. And but it was actually during that time that kept me home, which is when I met my husband.
blessing in disguise,
a complete blessing in disguise. So
yeah.
I was like, yes, I may have tore my knee, but I did meet my husband during that time.
That's everything worked out for the better.
That's right. All things work out for good.
Yeah. So how did you prepare for retirement as you were approaching that? Did you have any kind of thought process you went through of approaching, preparing yourself for a new identity, let's say, because you know there was a part of you that's going to die in a sense, but also a new kind of wave of information coming at you that you prepared? Did you prepare for a new life?
I did, but I did not. I prepared for it because I knew I wanted to do it. Right. So this was something that my husband and I talked about. I was like, hey, you know, in the next couple of years, this is something that I'm thinking about. So it wasn't like, oh, you should retire because you didn't get signed back. Right. So I knew it was coming in a couple of years. And I also was thinking about, okay, I wanted to have kids. Like, okay, how old am I going to be when I have kids? If I continue playing, you know, what age should I retire? If I want to start a family and all this stuff. And even something as silly as like, if you continue playing, your knees are going to be so, you know, messed up. You'll be walking funny, trying to run, trying to chase your kids around. My friends used to say that to me all the time. And I was like, oh, I probably don't want that. So I did prepare for it in that sense that I knew it was coming a couple of years before I announced it. However, when it did come, that, like you mentioned, it was like a death, and I did not expect it to be as hard as it was getting over not being the center of attention.
So the center of attention, not being center of attention, is what bothered you, or was it also like missing the locker room parts, missing?
It was all of it. I think that you are completely right when you say you're going through a burial process of killing this old life that you have been in the spotlight for so much, so long. You know, you have your agent calling, you're like, you know, you are the franchise player, right? And people have been saying your name like throughout this whole time of your career. You're not going to be in the locker room anymore. So then the new people are coming in and like, who are you? You know, that was hard. To not have a space in the place where you've been for your whole entire career, that was hard. To just go back and watch from a distance, and you're like, man, like I just miss being out there and running and just having this euphoria of playing itself and being a part of a team. Like that was hard. It's hard now.
I'm the coach.
And I'm sitting there. Sometimes when I'm coaching, I'm just like, oh, what would I give, right, to just be a part of playing again? And it's almost like knowing everything that I know right now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just being able to use everything that I know at this very moment back then, you know, and I'm like, oh, what I would give to just be a part of a team again, to where I get to, you know, showcase my skills and that type of stuff. So
it's a form of expression too. I mean, I wanted to be on the court because I was expressive. I'm expressive as it is, but that was like an emotional outlet. Like I'm hyper energetic, hyperactive, and I needed that outlet, you know. And now with my body halfway breaking down, I'm working to have it a little bit, you know, have it fixed, but I have it some sort of normal pain-free life. You can't exhaust yourself, and you always feel this disbalance, you know. You never feel like you, because you, it's refreshing when you can exhaust yourself. You go on a court, you play till exhaustion, and you feel like, man, I did it today. I feel great. And now there is no way to do it. Now you just kind of you're going through it, but you're not really. You go into the weight room. It's not going to be the same. It's not going to be the same dynamic as it is with playing with your teammates and just kind of and having that euphoria, as you say, having that achievement, that common achievement, and that those things, and getting your mind past it. It's never going to be like that again. It's never going to be like that again. You know, like and how. Ever. Yeah.
No matter what you do. Like I'm sitting there, like I'm coaching, but it's just not the same. And it's interesting because this morning I was just sitting there like, for me personally, I'm like, okay, I almost want to get back to the same weight that I was at playing. And I'm like, I'm expecting to get back at this weight when I was playing 40 minutes a game, working out, sprinting, doing all this stuff. And I'm not doing that right now and trying to. Because there's nothing like preparing for to get ready for a season, right? Like, no matter what I do, I'm not going to get that same type of, mental.
Endorphin hit.
Yeah. It doesn't, like, so sometimes I'm working out, I'm running, and I'm like, okay, we're good. This is enough. But if I was training, I would be like, no, you got to keep going until you get to the point where you feel in shape. But I'm like, what do I need to be in shape for?
Yeah,
you know, exactly. It's just one of those things. It's a tough balance.
you know what made me think of it was, and you can probably speak to it better because you have kids, but people say, you know, when you're trying to decide because you're happy and independent, you know, nothing to care for, really, I'm just caring for myself. I'm playing, like living a selfish lifestyle. But then, you know, you sacrifice a little bit of happiness for having a family, happiness. Like it's not, you know, whatever happiness is, but you sacrifice a little bit of that freedom to have kids that will bring you a different kind of joy, you know.
Absolutely.
So, and it's a little bit of that career ending where you finish that career. It's not going to be that happiness, but it's going to be this happiness. And you got to create.
You got
to create this happiness, just like as you have new kids that give you a different sense of happiness.
That's so good, and I love the way that you put it because it's not like I'm replacing it.
No,
it's literally just a different happiness. It's a different space. A different space, a different place in life. And it's like, no matter what I do, there's nothing that's going to fulfill me in this way that basketball did or playing in a professional level did. I've looked at a lot of different things and I'm just like, cause when I'm with my family and with my kids, I'm like, I feel this sense of gratitude and just amazing joy and this amazing, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have them and I'm so grateful. But when I played, there was this other sense of like, oh my gosh, I'm on the top of the world. I'm playing and I'm enjoying and I'm doing what I love, you know. And there's a sense of gratitude there, but they're not the same thing at all.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of like different stages and different phases in life and being able to for me, look back in those moments and say, like, you know, those were great. And I absolutely enjoyed it. I enjoyed my whole experience, the highs and the lows, and both I had. And I have to just leave it at that. And to not try to like relive, like, oh my gosh, I can't, I wish I was back there. I want to go back there so bad. But knowing that, okay, this phase of my life where I'm with my kids and, you know, having a career, a different career. So that's a pretty interesting phase to be into.
And remind yourself that you were at the mountaintop, you know, like there were things that other people can only dream of, you know, and then just having that and cherishing that part is like, all right, not thinking about not having it anymore, but like, oh, I got to achieve that. I got to live that life. You know, that's the beauty of it. That's one thing that I remind myself, like, I'm getting to live this life, which other people think of. So it's not like I have nothing to complain about, really. In reality, just kind of having that mind shift that I lived through. My game got taken away from me earlier. That was a frustration I dealt with for a longer period of time that other people have to deal with. But it's also part of it. And it also worked out for the better. I mean, I never could have dreamt of that. And maybe I wouldn't have worked out that way if I would have played. And
right.
So that brings me to something that this quote. Do you know this quote? If you've never arrived, you're always becoming. I forgot who did this quote, but
you've, no, I've never heard that. That's pretty good.
You've never arrived. You're always becoming. So it's something that you constantly, you know, just eternal growth. You're always seeking to become somebody new. That's also the career changes, and you know it brings me to your current role. How are you finding yourself as a coach in Baylor? How do you becoming like, what's your vision? Do you ever struggle with the being right now and becoming something new? Is there something within you that you can see yourself becoming more and seeing a path? And how do you feel in your current role right now with the balance of the two?
Yeah, that's really good. I think that, yes, there's a lot of struggles that I went through because of, it's a second career. I have to remind myself that my husband had to bring it to a perspective for me, you know, lately, because for me, I'm 40 years old. And he was like, you are in your second career, because for me, it was like, I feel like I don't know a lot of things, right? Like I'm coming into this coaching thing and I haven't been coaching, while as I'm working with people who've been coaching for like 20 years, right? 20 something years. And I'm like, I don't know as much as they do. Like, I feel so behind and I feel like I have to catch up so much. And there's so much, like, I don't know. And he had to remind me, like, what you have done, they have never done. Right. So you are in this second space and this second career of your life. So that was a new change for me to understand that I have to grow into this. Right. Because coaching is an art, right? It's not like you just come in and you know it, even if you've been playing, there's so many things that you have to still learn. So talk about becoming. Yes, I feel like I know a lot about the game, but there's a whole lot that I don't know about the coaching aspect of things. So that I have not arrived to. That I am becoming. And in this assistant role, again, sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to do a scout yet, right? And that's something that I'm like, oh my, I have to learn that. And I feel like sometimes I have to catch myself to not compare myself to other people who've been doing it for 20 years. But because this innate thing in me, because I was a pro athlete, like I should get it. I should know exactly what I'm doing. You know, so I have to remind myself, like, I've been for me, just owning having this assistant coach position for 1 year. And I want to become a head coach. So that's my becoming part. But even that, becoming a head coach, that's a journey in itself, you know? So even having a position to be a head coach, like the journey to become an excellent or great head coach takes a long time. So everything is a becoming space rather than an arrival. And I don't think that I will ever arrive at
exactly. And that's the best coaches, I don't think, ever feel like they arrive, because they're always learning something new. And we are picking up on new things. As long as you're open to new information and you're not really stuck in your ways, you are going to grow. And I am for eternal growth. I like ikigai is something that I really thrive for. It's just strive for, because it's something that I want to have, be improving on a daily basis in different areas of my life, just because it gives me a sense of achievement. You know, it gives me a sense of different achievements, gives me a sense of just having a wider spectrum of information available to me whenever I need it in different situations of life. And it's not going to be a tunnel vision. It's going to be a wide, wide range of visions that I'm going to have and recognize for each situation. And that's good. And that's also for you to, like, you are driven. You know, you otherwise you would not have achieved what you have achieved, and you're not striving for what you're striving for to become a head coach at some point. But there's also this balance between drive and stress, you know, that you put on yourself. Do you feel like you balance that well? Because there's also sometimes you know whether you have to push yourself or it's pulling you. Like, what's, you know, you got to have that balance of enjoying the process along the way and not really feel like you're really forcing it.
That's so good. I love that question, because maybe at the beginning of this season, this past season that we just had, I had to remind myself, because I'm a goal setter, you know, and I'm like, okay, at the end of this season, I want to accomplish this goal. And so that was one of my goals. Enjoy the moment, like be present in the moment, because I am so driven and I want to accomplish the things that I have set out for that I don't feel successful until I achieve those things.
Yeah.
When those things are literally, and I can hold them and I can see them and I can, you know, feel them. But with that being said, I oftentimes do not appreciate the simple moments,
the journey
that gets to those. Yeah. I oftentimes don't appreciate the journey.
Most because people I'm don't.
I get to focus on the goal. And so I had to tell myself that this whole season, hey, Sophia, enjoy the moment. You're not going to be with these group of girls for this is the last year you're going to be with these group of girls. Right. So please be mindful to just love on them, encourage them, give them something to make them feel that they're special, that they're thought about, you know, doing that, enjoying that moment, laughing with them, you know, talking with them, enjoy that rather than, like, okay, oh, I want to be a head coach. I got to be a head coach, you know, okay, what do I need to do? What, you know, who do I need to talk to? But just being present. So at times my husband has to remind me, like, Sophia, you are where you want it to be. You know, you have an amazing job. Like, you are at Baylor where you played. Like, you have to remember that. Like, that's a pretty incredible space to be in. So sometimes I get lost with that. And I do get stressed out when I start thinking too much ahead. I have to, again, the Holy Spirit has a way of being, come on back. Wheel back over here. And whatever may occur in my life, whether it's something to where my body physically gets sick, to where he's like, hey, lay down for a little bit. you've been thinking way too much. You've been pushing yourself too hard. So yeah. Let me just come lay down. So also the way, whether he used someone to just remind me or something to just kind of keep me present. And that's something that I have to continue to work on. It's just being like, hey, don't have an agenda. Just be present. Be present and enjoy this.
Yeah. Checking yourself along the journey. And Billy Donovan was somebody that gave an interview one time. That was years ago, though. And I kept being reminded of certain people that, you know, the journey is what matters more, because you're striving for that achievement and everybody's striving for it. You get it. It's euphoria. And then the next day it goes back to life. I mean, life goes back to normal.
Yes,
and if you did, it may not go back to normal right away, you know, like you're going to enjoy the championship or whatever, but at a certain point, it's just going to be washed away. And then along the way, if you didn't enjoy the people you were around on a daily basis, the process, the conversations that you had, the relationships that you build, it's kind of a waste in a way, you know, like you all that time, all the frustration you lived through just for that one goal, and you didn't enjoy everybody, every little step, every little seed that you planted along the way, that you didn't see it grow. You know, like there's certain things that you need to enjoy. And then if it comes, it's a dessert. It's on top, everything. That's just an extra.
Yeah, that is so good. I completely agree with you. I think there was a time when we won a national championship in college, I remember just saying like, oh my gosh, we did it. And then you mentioned like a couple of days later, I was like, okay, was that it? Like, that's it, you know, like that's what we were looking for. But it was my teammates that I enjoyed the most, you know, it wasn't necessarily the championship, but it's just the fact that I was with my teammates, with people that I absolutely cared about, possibly loved, right? That made that journey special more so than literally holding a trophy. You know, you work really hard to achieve it. But when you get it, you're like, okay, you know, like, I feel like I should be doing more because it felt like it was just too simple or too easy or something. But it is that journey that just makes things so special. So I want to be mindful of doing that this upcoming season. And you say that, but even for me, having children, like, I have to remind myself, like, hey, these people are not going to be this age for a long time.
Yeah.
You have to take the moment to enjoy them at this stage. Because sometimes I'm like, oh, I can't wait until they're teenagers. And when they, you know, we can just do this and this and this, you know. And sometimes I'm like, hey, you know, they're not going to be 7 for a long time. And what little they know now, they're going to do much more. Right. So you have to make sure that I am present here. So, yeah.
One second. I forgot that it's gonna get dark outside.
Okay.
So it just became a little bit dark outside, and now I was in the shadow, and now I'm back. Yeah, it's something that, like you said, goals, you should also set that as a goal, you know, to not forget the moment, not to forget the journey in itself.
Yeah.
And one last question I have for you before we jump into my ATOs that I prepared to have quick Q&As that I call ATOs. But when you're retired, there are certain predispositions that as athletes we all had, you know, certain behaviors that had to get unlearned, like some with some, like sometimes aggression is one of them, you know, like aggression. And not learning, not knowing the boundaries, when to turn it on and off, because you have to have the aggression on the court, physical, mental, energy, and then, I mean, in real life, they're gonna look at you like you're crazy. They might, you know, might get arrested or whatever. But I mean, you're not gonna make friends like that anyway. But it's just certain behaviors that you had to unlearn after you retired, and you had to check yourself in certain situations that this is real life and this was basketball life.
Yes, I think my main struggle was the way that I spoke to people. Especially the way that in my career, being that I was like the star player, you know, and it's just like, no, you just got to get it done. Whatever I say, just do exactly what I say, you know. Yeah. And that has been a struggle for me, even throughout my marriage, being able to, the way that I talk to my husband, at times when he had to check me and be like, hey, it's not what you say, but it's actually how you say it. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so I have to be very conscious of how I speak to others. And I think that became part of, I developed that habit in basketball, being able to be like, no, you just do it. That's it. Go, scream, roll, do it. You know?
That's a good one.
Yeah, I command you, right, to do what I say.
Yeah.
And so whenever I got married, it was like I really had to unlearn that, because I was like, this is a different space that I'm in. You know, it's like, you're not the leader of this team, to where whatever you do, it's like, this is a union that you have to work together with somebody to function well. And to know that, you're not beneath, you know,
but you know what, there's something that's going to happen along the way is, now that was the player's aspect, the player learned behavior that you had as a leader. But now when you're going to have dual roles at the same time as a coach, you're going to have to be demanding. You're going to have to be one of you're going to have to be the one that's going to tell them what to do and demand it. And then at the same time, 2 hours later at home, you're going to have to turn it off. You know? So that, I just giving you a heads up. I mean, that's something you're gonna have to learn of, okay, I'm back to my other space. I have to turn the alter ego off and
live
like a normal person.
I know. Yeah, you gotta learn to listen now.
It's tough.
That's so funny. That's so funny. I heard a few people were telling me that they actually live a good distance away from the gym, so that way on their drive, that's when they know to turn off whatever happens.
Pick that Batman costume off.
Leave it. By the time you get home on your drive, you know, this whatever happened at work should stay there. So the drive is that process of turning off your coaching and whatever happens. Work. So I thought that was pretty good. I was like, maybe I need to live about 30, 45 minutes away from my work. So that gives me some time.
Yeah, we're going to call it the wash machine process, that 30 minute drive, that the wash machine just that's washing it off.
That's right.
So you're ready for my ATOs? Listen, all right. One habit you can't go without every day.
Reading my Bible.
Biggest regret you would want to correct in your past?
Though I made some terrible mistakes with my friendships. I would love to change that. And it ruined some friendships. So I would love to change that.
If you had a chance for a 60-second phone call, who would you call and why?
Anybody. Question.
Anybody.
I would actually call, I'd probably call Coach Moki. And I would talk to her about the impact that she had on me and how that could be beneficial for her and us and all the people that she has coached.
What does a good life look like to you?
I feel like I'm living a good life right now. I have an amazing relationship with my husband. I have an amazing relationship with my kids, two beautiful kids. I want to teach them everything that I can to help them to be successful, but not do everything for them. And I think just having friendships, true friendships, to where I can lean on people and trust and depend and know that they will be there. That will be the icing on the cake for this life that I have.
One skill you wish you had.
I wish I was musical. Like I can play a musical instrument.
Me too, by the way. That's one of mine too. best personal purchase you made in the last 12 months?
Best personal purchase. Ooh, shout out to me. I just bought a new phone. It's a pretty fun. It's a pretty fun game. I don't really shop too much for myself these days as, you know, being a mom, but I bought some pretty amazing things for my children. So,
best advice you received from your coaches that you hold on to this day?
Two things. One thing, go all in, you know, whatever you're doing, go all in, go all after it. And my other advice was you have to move on. You know, when something bad happens, you have to move on. You cannot live in the past.
Next play. Yep. Something you believed in the past that was true to you, but it changed, you changed your mind on.
I think that from a biblical perspective, I feel that I have often believed some things that pastor said without me reading the Bible for myself and seeing it in the way that the Holy Spirit has revealed to me now. So that even though they were true, I feel like the way that the Holy Spirit has been revealing it to me, it makes what they say almost like, I don't want to say untrue, but not in the way that it should have been taught, if that makes sense.
And the last question that I ask everybody is the Tim Ferriss question that I have to give credit to him. It's his question. Your favorite failure, something that you failed on in the past, but you look on and you look back on and you feel like without that, you may have not learned that this, and you've looking back at it isn't quite as like a favorite failure that you achieved something on.
Ay, ay, ay. I think one of my favorite, I the most life-changing failure, I would say. I had made a comment, you know, that I feel like offended a lot of people. And during that time, I think there was like this pride and stuff that was happening. But it's been about, you know, 10 years since that. And I feel like God has revealed himself to me in a way that I would have never experienced him if I didn't go through that moment. And so for me, it has taken my relationship with God to this whole other level that I did not even realize that I needed. And so I would say within the last 10 years, my spiritual growth has just been so phenomenal. And with that, it means that I see people in a way that I've never saw them before. And so I get to love and appreciate people for just who they are and where they are.
That's beautiful. And not trying
to change people. Yeah.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. That's We can finish on that. No, that's yeah. A great. Well, you survived my let's call it. I said it in the prior podcast, 55. A coach used to make us run in high school, actually in college as well, 5 and 55. I think you ran it with us also sometimes.
Oh, what was it? The 5 lap in
55
seconds?
Yeah. The 5 and 55 and
I need to do that with our players now.
Well, you survived to 55 minutes more or less. I think we were on it. So I appreciate you. So it's been like 24 years since we've known each other. Wow. And it's a friendship that. Rolling on and
absolutely. You give me energy when I speak to you and life. So this is what we're talking about, being able to take this moment to enjoy it and enjoy friendship and
exactly. Community. Exactly. We feed off each other, and that's always been the case. And I'm glad we're still friends. And hopefully I'll see your family soon, and we all get to hang out and break bread again.
Absolutely. Hopefully God will send you this amazing woman so you can get married and we can be at the wedding and celebrate with you. That would be
beautiful. Yeah. I'm taking it, you know what my mind is, I'm looking for good company, first of all. If that good company is going to turn into something bigger, you know, so it's just kind of like rolling with the punches, baby. That's what I do.
There you go. When you stop looking, that's when things start happening.
Yeah, exactly. Living life. Appreciate it. So it's been great. And thanks, everybody, for being here. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hope you guys learned something, took something away from it. And I'm sure everybody, it was an enriching conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bennett.
Thank you.